You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and again, I'm your host. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, 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 wherever you are, however you're listening, whatever you're listening on, whatever your mood is. May the Father bless you through this message, and may He awaken you, and may He teach you His wisdom and knowledge that will keep you with a long life. I was away on quite a long trip. I'm not going to talk too much about this. I talked about it on the Rabbit Hole Radio Show a little bit. But I was on a long trip. And I'm not going to tell you what this was about or anything like that. But I had asked the Father if this wasn't going to be good for me, please don't let it happen. And He knew already, before I went on the trip, whether it was going to be good for me or not good for me. And so I was wondering, and I was talking to another brother, one of our brothers, a dear brother, and I wondered why we would go on, why I had to go on this trip. I think I'll learn more in the future on why, but it taught me a great lesson. And it's a shame that it turns out the way it does, but this is the way things are. There's just nothing you can do about things. But I also realized that not only was I to learn a lesson, maybe write a song, which I did on the way home, but there were two people that I was have encountered, let's say, during this, and they are brethren or sistren, whatever you want to say. And it appears that the Father was testing these two people to see what they would do, how they would, whatever, I'm not going to say much about it. All I'm saying is they were tested. And you know, what the thing about it is I'm just not sure about our brethren. They're very intelligent. They're awake. But yet they just still don't realize that the Father's watching everything. They just can't understand that He is watching everything. And to be honest with you, I don't know if people think I'm easily foolable or gullible or something, like as if I can't see what's really going on in these situations. And I don't say much about what I see. If I'm seeing these things, just imagine what the Father is seeing. And I'm no perfect man either. The Father watches me just like He watches everyone. But I'm aware that the Father's watching me, always aware, because I love the Father, and I'm glad He's watching me. He helps to keep me in line and keep me doing what I should be doing. But, you know, people will skirt around things, like they'll tell you they're blessing you when they're really not blessing you like they could have blessed you. And I think they do it to ease their own mind and say, well, I did something for somebody. But when it comes down to it, it was a mere pittance of what they could have done. And it wouldn't have hurt them in any way. And it would have helped me incredibly. But they chose to do what they did. And I'm not, you know, judging them. I'm just saying I can see it. I'm sure the Father can see it. And I expressed my needs and, you know, basically, it's just hard to tell you this. I'm not going to continue with it, but, you know, it's just hard to watch this stuff. What you watch your brothers and sisters being tested, they're not aware that the Father's watching. They just don't know. They're awake. I don't know. I it's hard to, and yet I still love my brothers and sisters. What can you do? They are what they are. They are who they are. And I still love them. Now, what are you going to do about it? What can you really do about it? You can tell them the Father's watching. They just don't hear you. However, this is the way it is. Anyway, we're going to be going into a compare teaching here called Israel in the, and I, you know, I have to change the name of this, the newer part of the Testament. Israel in the newer part of the Testament. As I have explained to you before, the books of the Bible are one testament. It's one book of the history of Adam. The Jews decided to divide the book. This is what they do with us. This is what they do with everything. They divide and weaken everything in their path. So they also divided the scriptures. And they claimed that the older part of the Testament is their part of the Testament, which is completely false, another fable of the Jews. And then they said the newer part of the Testament was ours, and they just ripped out the middle of it that connects the two. So Mr. Compere obviously wasn't aware of this. The Father has made me aware of this. I have made you aware of it. And you may agree or you may disagree, whatever you want to do. I'm telling you that it's one testament. That Israel is both in the older part of the Testament and the newer part, and the middle too. And this is in no way Jewish literature. They, as scribes, got a hold of these scriptures because of people like David and others, and they became jealous seeing what our covenant was with our Father. They also were very angry that they say Jacob stole their birthright, the Edomites. They are the Edomites of the Bible and the Canaanites. And Esau gave up his birthright for a bowl of pottage, but he had given it up before that anyway. And so they believe they're going to claim that birthright back by stealing it from us. So they have claimed that they are the true Israel of the Bible and that they are the tribe of Judah, which they are not. They never have been and they never will be. They never can be. So this is by Bertrand Compere. We're going to keep doing some of the works of Compere, because I told you why, that it's very important. His works are very important. And by me reading them and commenting on them, I think it will give it just a nudge in a better direction. You'll be able to actually hear what's being said. So he starts off. It is impossible to truly understand the Bible or any part of it without understanding that the Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, and Scandinavian people of today are the Israel of the Bible. The Bible speaks always and only to Israel. See, not to Jews. To claim its benefits for yourself, you must start by putting yourself in the ranks of Israel. Even the major churches show some dim awareness of this fact, although they won't admit it. For example, the Episcopal Church won't admit that we are Israel, but read their Book of Common Prayer. Throughout this book, it always speaks from the standpoint of Israel. To get out of the embarrassment of this inconsistency, most churches teach substantially this: although Yahweh's promises to Israel were absolute and unconditional, Yahweh welched on those promises and has given them to the church instead. Now, you know the father would never welch, correct? Although they don't express this quite frankly, if their doctrine were true, they wouldn't have much of a religion. If Israel couldn't trust God's word or Yahweh's word, who else could? But it is not true. God never welched on a promise. The father wouldn't do that, right? Every promise he had ever made or ever made to Israel, he has fulfilled and is today fulfilling to Israel and to no one else. Then the churches say, well, we are only Gentiles, but we have become spiritual Israel, quote unquote. Now that is a most remarkable statement. The people of Israel were never at any time a group of people who all held the same religious belief. At the best, there were always many apostates and idolaters among them. During much of their history, nearly the entire nation became apostates. The great prophet Elijah found that in the whole nation of Israel, there remained only 7,000 men still loyal to Yahweh. But the Bible never says they ceased to be Israel. When it was denouncing them for their apostasy, Israel always was purely a racial group, all of the same race, despite the apostasy of some of them from the true religion. Now, I don't call it religion, ladies and gentlemen, but if you wish to call it religion, you can. What I have been teaching and I recommend to everybody on this planet, you got to figure it this way, that this solves the denominational problem. If we are to have a relationship with Yahweh, instead of worshiping a group or men or a one of these denominations or men, we will have success. See, if we all had a relationship with the Father and we said, I don't identify as CI, I don't identify as a Catholic, I don't identify as any of these things that the Jew likes to pigeonhole you into. I have a relationship with the Father. I love him. I obey his commandments. We may not all agree on everything, but we all love the Father. See, if we all had a relationship with the Father rather than saying I'm a Catholic or whatever it is, we wouldn't have that division anymore. That division is caused by these denominations, and the denominational division was caused by the Jews. So by having a relationship with the Father, you will no longer risk him saying, you saying to him, well, I did this in your name and I did that in your name. And he would say to you, depart from me, you worker of iniquity. I never knew you. I explained this a while ago. Of course he knows who everyone is. What he means is I never had a relationship with you. You might have been a great Catholic and done this for the Catholic Church and done this for the Pope and done this for, you know, whatever. But I never knew you. You understand what I'm saying? All right, back to the article. Therefore, the only way anyone could become a spiritual Israelite, quote unquote, would have to be the same process by which he could become a spiritual Negro, quote unquote, or a spiritual Mongolian, quote unquote, something no one would ever do. You can be an Israelite only by birth and by inheritance. Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? In many previous broadcasts, this is Comparé speaking, I have presented the evidence that the Israelites exist today under the name of the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, and Germanic people, and that God's promises, or Yahweh's promises to Israel, have been actually fulfilled to them. But many churches teach that the newer part of the Testament has done away with all this, that it threw all of Yahweh's promises and prophecies about Israel into the rubbish, into the rubbish can, and started a new religion with Israel left out of it. This is positively not true. The whole Bible is consistency from beginning to end. I have often told you that there is as much Christianity in the older part of the Testament as in the newer part of the Testament, though it is harder to understand because it is presented in the forms of prophecy, rituals, and symbols. Now, I want to show you that the newer part of the Testament, like the older, is an Israel book. Not a Jewish book, ladies and gentlemen. An Israel book. We are the Israelites of the Bible, not the Jews, not the Mongolians, not the Negroes, not any of them. Back to the article. The four Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John deal with the life and ministry of Yeshua, Jesus Christ. Jesus taught always the truths pertaining to Israel. In Mark 12, verse 28 and 29, a scribe asked Jesus, "Which was the greatest commandment of all?" We read, "Jesus answered unto him, The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, Yahweh our God is one," and he uses the word Lord. Jesus regarded his whole ministry as being primarily to Israel. In Matthew 15, verse 24, Jesus said, "I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Again, when Jesus sent out his 12 disciples to teach the people, we read in Matthew 10, verse 5 and 6, "These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles," you see, "and into any city of the Samaritans enter ye not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." You see, that was the commandment. He didn't say to go to Mongolia. He didn't say to go to China. He forbade it. Forbade it, however you wish to say it. And there's your Gentiles. Go not into the way of the Gentiles. That would, I believe, would mean the heathen nations in this case. And so would the city of Samaritans. So it continues. The article continues. Again, in Matthew 19, verse 27 and 28, Peter asked Jesus what reward would be given to those who had given up all to follow him. And Jesus replied to Peter, "Verily I say unto you," verily means truly, "truly I say unto you, that which ye have followed me, that ye which have followed me, in the regeneration, when the Son of Man," he didn't call himself the Son of God, you see, "shall sit on the throne of his glory, ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel." Note that carefully. He didn't say that they would become heads of the Methodist, Episcopal, or Baptist churches, but they would become rulers and judges over the 12 tribes of Israel. This is not something of the past which Yahweh had to discard as a failure. This is Jesus Christ's prophecy of what was so eternally true that it would still be in effect in the millennium when he comes back to rule the earth in person. Also, many of the parables used by Jesus Christ concerned Israel, so Jesus Christ testified in the Gospels. So you see, there's actually going to be 24 seats, and 12 of them are going to be filled by the disciples. Surely no other authority as great as that of Jesus Christ can be found to testify what is truly Christian. Yet, there are still many people who mistakenly believe that the Apostle Paul changed all of this throughout not only all of the older part of the Testament, but also the teachings of Jesus Christ and set up a new religion. Paul would be the last person in the world to try such a thing. Paul makes it clear in every epistle he wrote that he is writing to and about Israel. Although some of this has been hidden by mistranslation in the King James Version of the Bible, let's review some of them. I hope you're neshabbing, you're listening. I'm going to take a sip of coffee. I mean cocoa. Okay. First, Let's look at the so-called epistle to the Romans. To whom does Paul address it? Romans 1 verse 7 shows that it is addressed to those persons in Rome who are called saints, quote unquote. Yes, I know that your King James Version says called to be saints, quote unquote, but you will notice that the words to be are in italic type, which shows that these two words were not in the original writing, but that the translators added them in order to make it correspond with what the translators thought Paul should have said. But let's take Paul at his own word. What he actually did write instead of what somebody else substituted for it. Remember that Paul was a very well-educated man who knew the scriptures well. Paul knew that a saint, quote-unquote, was not somebody who would be named such by the church in the Dark Ages several centuries after Paul wrote, because the so-called saint, quote-unquote, had done some deed of piety. Do you know who all of the saints are? Paul knew, for he knew the Psalms. In the first place, what does saint, quote unquote, mean? It means set apart or consecrated to the service of Yahweh. See, that means to be holy, to be set apart. It is used, It is used in the scriptures almost exclusively of people as members of a class rather than as of individuals. It is used to describe the status of Yahweh's people Israel. Therefore, Psalm 148, verse 14, tells us all of God's saints, who all of God's saints are. That's Psalm 148, 14, for those of you that wish to check it. It says, not just some of them, but all of them, it says. He also exalteth the horn of his people, the praise of all his saints, even of the children of Israel, a people near unto him. I want to comment on that, a people near unto him. Many people's lips are near unto him, but their hearts are far from him. I must speak on this for a few minutes here. You see, we have the power to self-deceive. Deception doesn't always come from without. It can come from within. And we can deceive ourselves to think that we're near him and that our hearts are near him when it's really not. And so you must continually check yourself to see if you're near or far. You know, most of you know whether you believe in the Father or not. There's so many people that say they can read scriptures and they can talk about scriptures, but they don't really have a relationship with the Father. They're pushers away of the truth. They love to shove the truth away. They, in a way that's snide, in a way that's, I don't know how the word I would use, I suppose, cunning. And they don't, maybe even they don't even know they're doing it, but they like to do it because they like to. It's just the way they are. I don't want to say too much about it. I just want to you to know that self-deception, I believe we're all guilty of it, and we've all done it from time to time, and we must be careful of it. If you don't realize that the Father's watching you, you're deceiving yourself. If you don't know that the Father, you are going through tests in life and being put through tests, are you deceiving yourself thinking, I passed that test with no problem, or did you? I think you should think about what had taken place and then say, did I pass the test or did I fail it? Did I do all I could or did I do very little? I don't know. It's very interesting to me to think about how people think. And in a way, I feel sorry for all of us because Cain was warned, as I told you before, that Abel warned him that if you kill me, the father will see it. Now, you can expect that from a beast of the field or an hybrid, but what about the father's own children? You would expect the father's own children to say, well, I love the father, I obey his commandments, and I want to be near him. I want my heart to be near him. I don't want to just say something. I want to do it. I want the father to know as he's watching me. I know he's watching me. You know what I'm saying? This is all of us. We should be saying, I know the father's watching me, and it's a wonderful thing that he's watching me because it helps to keep me in line. So, okay, so it says here, to all that be in Rome, beloved. Okay, let me start here. So in the epistle to the Romans, as it was wrongly named in your Bible, for Paul didn't call it that, but the translators did. In this book, Paul says he is writing, to all that be in Rome, beloved of Yahweh, called saints, quote unquote. Since all of the saints are Israelites according to the Bible, which Paul knew very well, we know that he was not writing to just Romans in general. Nero, I told you that means black, right? In Italian. Nero, for example, was a Roman. In fact, Nero was emperor at the time Paul wrote this epistle, and we may be sure that Paul never considered Nero a saint. These saints are also identified as called, quote unquote. Let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, are you called? Or you new people that are listening to this show, you've been attracted to my shows through the audio stream. Are you being called? I think you should consider it. And if the Father calls, be sure to answer. Don't ignore the call. Let's continue. Paul knew whom Yahweh had called. Isaiah 41, verse 8 and 9 told it, but thou, Israel, art my servant. This is not talking about Jews. Make this very clear, folks. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. Thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called thee from the chief men thereof and said unto thee, thou art my servant. I have chosen thee and not cast thee away. Isaiah 51 verse 2 states, look unto Abraham your father and unto Sarah that bore you. For I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. Paul well knew that God had called and predestined his people Israel to be the people who are consecrated to his service, which is just what the word saint means. Now let me stop right there for a second. Abraham was not a Jew, and neither was Jacob. Esau, on the other hand, was his brother and was white, but he left and went and was absorbed racially by the Edomites. May I note again to you that the Jews call us the Amalekites, but it's a mistake. See, they wouldn't dare call us the Edomites because Edom is in modern Jewry. But what they don't realize, obviously, is that the Amalekites are part of the seed line of the Edomites. And we are not part of the seed line of the Edomites at all. We are Jacobites. We are from Jacob. We are from Abraham. We are from Adam, Noah, etc., etc., etc. Noah did not have three different colored sons. Let's get real, ladies and gentlemen. If the law is kind after kind, that's what it is. The Jew is the one that is breaking the law of kind after kind by promoting race mixing these days. Like as if the father says, well, I don't care if you're a hybrid. I don't care if you're a purebred. You're all my children. I love queers. I love transvestites. I love Jews that lie and hate and do everything I don't love. I don't want to be done. Now, you're deceiving yourself, by believing such things. So, he says, after he said about what the word saint means, therefore in Romans 8 verse 30, Paul says, moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called, and whom he called, he also justified. Who did he justify, folks? He justified Israel, not Jews, the Adamites. We are his offspring. He is like the second Adam, in a sense. Adam fell, Yeshua rose. And when he rose, we had the promise of rising with him and the promise of the kingdom. And we had been restored and in the process of being restored. We had been redeemed and have been and will be redeemed. And it says, and whom he justified, them he also glorified. I hope you're excited about these things because it really is exciting to know what the Father has done for us and to know that he loved us this much. That should break down your stony heart, or that should melt your heart and make you know how much the Father loves you. And it should make you love him the same. Equivocally. Similarly, Paul writes to the saints in various other cities, 1 Corinthians 1 verse 2, 2 Corinthians 1 verse 1, Ephesians 1 verse 1, Philippians 1 verse 1, Colossians 1 verse 2, and 24 through 26, and Philemon verse 5. All these clearly state that Paul was writing to those who are the saints in those various cities. Paul knew that the saints, the Israelites, were the people to whom Yahweh's message was addressed, the people in whom the message must take root. You see, in other words, he must be near to your heart. You must know him. His word must live in you. You must take joy in reading his word and knowing his word and obeying his commandments, for his commandments are not grievous. You understand what I'm saying? Back to the article. So the people in whom the message must take root, that they should be called to his service as Yahweh had declared from the beginning. Therefore, it was to them that Paul wrote, and not to the Gentiles in general. In my next broadcast, we will consider this point as we continue with the proof that the newer part of the Testament is as much an Israel book as the older part of the Testament. And that's part one. There's three parts to this, and I think that this is wonderful. Maybe we can get through the whole thing, I can't say. Why don't you just take a sip of your drink and contemplate what was just said? So you know that Paul was speaking to the saints in all these cities. He wasn't just speaking to everyone in the cities, any more than when he speaks to us these days, he's not speaking to everybody in America. You understand? If I wrote an epistle to America, to the saints, I wouldn't be writing it to all the people in America. I'd be writing it to those who are his remnant, those who are his saints. Israel in the newer part of the Testament, part two. In this series, we shall see that the newer part of the Testament is as much an Israel book as the older part of the Testament. In my last sermon, we saw that Jesus Christ strongly emphasized that he had come only to his own people, Israel, and sent out his disciples with the direct command, go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter ye not, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Also, he promised his disciples that in the millennium that they should sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel, not various religious denominations. I'm excited about the Father's Word. I hope you are too. It brings joy to me. It gives me confidence. It shows me His love. It gives me hope. It helps me to live longer. For He says, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. And if I can impart to you knowledge, whether it comes from Compere, whether it comes through me, from the Father, or whether it comes from the Scriptures, or whatever it is, in any way, I'm achieving my mission, part of my mission. I have several missions within one great mission. My greatest part of my mission is to get you to have a relationship with the Father Himself, to turn back to Him, to know who you are in this world. You will know your identity. But the most important thing is that I can convince you to forget about worshiping institutions or men, but that rather you would worship the Father, the Holy One of Israel, Himself, and have a relationship with Him. You can still fellowship with all your brethren, but you don't have to be pigeonholed into some religion and quartered up, so that you see, the more divisions there are in these churches, with all the more divisions, the more divided we are up, and the less strength we will have. That's the idea of dividing things. See, the Testament being one Testament, when it's divided up, it has less power. When you divide the people of Israel into 33,000 denominations, the power of the church as a whole, so to speak, is severely diminished. Do you understand what I'm telling you? So by you turning away from the institution and away from worship of men and turning your worship to the Father, turning to Him for a relationship with Him, we will no longer be divided because we'll all be with the Father. You understand? And even if 5%, 10%, 30% of us do this, the power will be immense. Because we will be one in the Father rather than being divided up into all these different denominations. I hope that's clear to you. And that's the greatest part of my mission. If you haven't turned to the Father, I encourage you to turn to Him. Ask Him to show you that He's real if you have a doubt. Ask Him to heal you if you have a sickness. Ask Him to show you His knowledge and wisdom. Ask Him to be your king and your father and your counselor and your priest, etc., etc., etc. For there is no finer counselor, no finer priest, no finer king than Him. Why would you want to take second, third, fourth, fifth best when you could have the best? And there is no better than the Father Yahweh Himself. In any form or fashion, there is no better. I promise you this. So Compere goes on here in the article, then we started to study what Paul wrote on the subject. Most people have been taught by their churches that Paul started a new religion with Israel left out of it. On the contrary, as we shall see, Paul still taught good Israel doctrines. We saw that in his epistle to the Romans, which most people think was a message to Gentiles, the Gentiles, Paul was writing only to those particular people in Rome who were saints, quote-unquote, and that they, as Paul knew very well, I believe it was Psalm 148:14, he missed it here, tells us all of the saints are the children of Israel. All of the saints are the children of Israel. You see, let me stop there and comment about that. There are people that think that just because you're white, you'll be saved. Just because you're a child of Israel, you're saved. But you see, the children of Israel are the ones that follow his word, are the ones that have their hearts near him. So I have taught in the past about that, that it's not true that just because you're white, you're going to be saved. Just because you're one of the Father's offspring doesn't necessarily mean you'll be saved. You are being tested in this life, ladies and gentlemen, just as I am. And those that are overcomers of our race shall be these saints. We are the ones that love the Father, that have a relationship with him. We are the ones that wish to do his will and care about his will. We are the ones that love our brothers, but can recognize that some people that say they're our brothers are not. So it says here, therefore Paul understood. So what I'm saying is all members of the tribes, all 12 tribes shall be saved, but let me not confuse you. Some members of all those 12 tribes shall be saved. Some of all of Israel shall be saved, but not all. You know that there's people in our race that have been race traders, that have grafted themselves in with the goats. And you know that they're not going to be saved. So all Israel won't be saved in that sense. All Israel will be saved in the sense where some of all of the tribes will be saved. Those would be the saints. See, because there were people that in Rome that weren't, they were white, but they weren't saints. They weren't following the Father. They weren't part of the Father, I'm sure. But those that did were called saints. I believe that's what he's saying here. If you wish to argue, then you can. So it goes on. Therefore, Paul understood what he was writing to the Israelite colony in Rome. We saw the same thing was true of Paul's epistles to various other cities, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and the letter to Philemon. But let's examine the epistle to the Romans still more closely. Romans is generally regarded as supremely the book written to the Gentiles. It might surprise you to know that there is no such word as Gentiles in the Bible in its original language. Quote unquote. Oh, yes, I know that you can still find it in your King James version of the Bible, also in the less accurate of the modern English translations, but it was never in the original languages and has been put in by the translators. Neither Hebrew nor Greek has such a word as Gentile, quote unquote, nor any word which is equivalent to it. I hope you're listening. The word Gentile, quote-unquote, comes from the Latin word gentilis, quote-unquote, which means one who is not a Roman citizen, quote-unquote. If you were to use the word accurately, you would have to say that Jesus Christ and all of his disciples were Gentiles, and none of them were Roman citizens. Paul was the only one of the apostles who was not a Gentile, for Paul was a Roman citizen. But what does the Bible say in the original languages in which it was written? In the older part of the Testament, which was written in Hebrew, whenever you saw the word Gentile, quote unquote, in your English Bible, the Hebrew word goy, quote unquote, if it was in the singular or the plural form of it, goyim, quote unquote, quote, this word means precisely nation and nothing else. You remember that Yahweh told Abraham, I will make nations of thee. Genesis 17, verse 6. In the Hebrew, Yahweh said, I will make goyim of thee. It would have been utterly too silly to translate this. I will make Gentiles of your descendants. So the translators were here translated it correctly as nations. Again, you remember that when the twins, Jacob and Esau, were still in the womb, Rebekah and their mother, they struggled together, and she prayed to Yahweh to tell her why this was so. And Yahweh answered her, two nations are in thy womb. In the Hebrew original, this says, two goyims are in thy womb. Certainly Yahweh would never have told her, two Gentiles are in thy womb. So here the translators had to translate it correctly, nations. But this is exactly the same word which they use, which they translate Gentiles in many other places. In the newer part of the Testament, which most of you have, was translated from manuscripts written in the Greek language. Whenever in your newer part of the Testament, you see the word Gentile, quote unquote, the word in the Greek was ethnos, quote unquote. Ethnos means nation, just as the Hebrew word goy does. In many places, it would have been silly to translate it Gentile, quote unquote. So the translators had to use the correct word nation. For example, in Luke 7, we read that a certain Roman officer, a centurion, had a servant who was dying. The centurion asked some elders of the Jews to intercede for him with Jesus and asked Jesus to heal his servant. The Jews did urge Jesus to do this for the centurion, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this, for he loveth our ethnos, and he hath built us a synagogue. Surely no Jew would have praised the centurion for loving the Gentiles, nor would he have built a synagogue for Gentiles. So they had to translate this one correctly as nation, not Gentile. But everywhere you see the word Gentile in the New Testament, it is the same word ethnos in the Greek. The word ethnos has no pagan or non-Israel nor even Greek connotation. The Greeks distinguished between Greeks and barbarians, which all educated men like Paul knew. So he said in Romans 1 verse 14, I am debtor to both the Greeks and to the barbarians. So just remember that Paul never once wrote Gentile in all his writings. He only wrote ethnos, which means nation. Therefore, do not be misled by the translation where you read Romans 1 verse 13, that I must have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. For Paul actually wrote, even as among other nations. Paul had made converts who lived among other nations, both in Greece and in Syria and Asia Minor. You must carefully judge from the general context in which the term occurs, whether the particular nation of which he speaks is an Israel nation or a non-Israel nation. If it is a non-Israel nation, then the common term Gentile may as well be used, even though inaccurately, because we are accustomed to it. But for further proof that Paul was not writing to Gentiles in the epistle to the so-called Romans, note how Paul tells these saints in Rome, to whom he writes in Romans 4, that Abraham is our father as pertaining to the flesh, and Abraham, who is the father of us all. Certainly he could not have told any Gentile that Abraham was his father as pertaining to the flesh. Again, this is consistent with what Paul wrote to the saints in the city of Corinth. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1 through 4, he writes, Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how all our fathers were under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock which followed them, and that rock was Christ. Let's stop right there. I'm going to play one of my songs from my In Vain album called Dreams, and then we shall continue. ¶¶ Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Saxon's Creed Radio Show, coming straight to you from my home site, davidjamesboston.com. You can go there. You can view my blog. There's lots of great articles in the blog, if I do say so, very interesting articles that will teach you many things. All the archives are there. My artwork, Pink Floyd artwork, Israelite flags, all kinds of things you can go there and see and enjoy. I suggest you do, davidjamesboston.com. So, there's also a donate button at the top of the site if you wish to help me in my work, and I hope you will. I hope you see the value in my work and that you see value in me and that you would want to keep this going and help me in my work and share in what I'm trying to do here, what the Father's trying to do through me. I hope you see value in that, and I hope that you will consider that. Okay, let's continue in Compare. So, Paul could, it's continuing now, Paul could not have truthfully told Gentiles that their fathers, like this, had all passed through the Red Sea with Moses and had all been protected by the pillar of cloud by day and of fire by night and had all eaten the manna and had all drunk the water of the water which poured out of the rock in answer to Moses' prayer. Only to Israelites could he have said this with the slightest spark of truth. Not even the prophets of the older part of the Testament were more firmly convinced of the great and continuing destiny of Israel than was Paul. I know that you have been taught in your churches that Paul threw all this into the rubbish heap and started a new religion without Israel in it. Where they get that idea, I certainly don't know. Listen to this. From the Epistle to the Romans, and see if you can find anything here to show that Paul thought that Israel was all through. In Romans 9, verse 4 and 5, Paul speaks of the Israelites to whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of Yahweh and the promises. Whose are the fathers and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came? You have been taught that Gentiles are adopted, quote-unquote, as the children of God, or Yahweh. But did you notice that Paul says that this is the Israelites to whom pertaineth the adoption? Did you hear that? It is the Israelites to whom pertaineth the adoption. How could Paul make it any clearer than this? Which is in Romans 11, verse 1 and 2, I say then, hath God cast away his people? Has Yahweh cast away his people? Yahweh forbid. For I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham and of the tribe of Benjamin. Now, I always have to say this, okay? He says he's an Israelite, not a Jew. And I'll prove to you again, as I have many times in the past with this, that Paul is not a Jew. I'll say what he said right here. For I am also an Israelite of the seed of Abraham and of the tribe of Benjamin. Okay, if Paul were a Jew, he couldn't be a citizen of Rome, for no Jew could be a citizen of Rome. But Paul was a citizen of Rome. Therefore, he could have not been a Jew. So understand that the confusion comes. The word Israelite is from a long time ago. The word Jew is relatively new. And this is where everybody gets confused because they think Israelite means you're a Jew. But notice that they call themselves Israelis, not Israelites. See, you're given tips tip-offs to that these are the fables of the Jews. They're trying to steal our birthright. They're trying to steal our identity and pretend that they are the tribe of Judah. Notice again how they pick the top tribe, the tribe with the scepter and the crown and everything with it. They didn't pick the bottom tribe, the least of the tribes, just like the Jewish Pharisees did in the synagogues. They picked the highest seats. They picked the most important seats. And that is not a biblical principle. The scriptures tell you to pick the lower seat and have somebody promote you to the higher seat. You can see that the Jew, like the Jew Pharisees, picked the top tribe to pretend that they were. They're not the tribe of Judah. They're not any of the 12 tribes at all. It proves that they're Jews because they picked the top tribe in their fable of them being Israel. They're not Israel at all. And to call the occupied land over there Israel, when it's not even a country at all, is a complete deception. I wonder why you can't see that, those of you that can't. I wonder why you can't understand that even in the newer part of the Testament, it says two times that I know of in Timothy and in Titus, beware of the fables of the Jews. So Paul continues, for I am also an Israelite of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. Yahweh has not cast away his people, which he foreknew. Remember what he says to those whom Yahweh foreknew. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called. And whom he called, them he also justified. And whom he justified, them he also glorified. Since Yahweh's people Israel are those he foreknew, then this was written about them. Correct, ladies and gentlemen? Correct. So we see that in the newer part of the Testament, the writings of Paul very clearly constitute Israel books, just as much as the older part of the Testament. But what of the other books in the newer part of the Testament, which were not written by Paul? Are they also Israel books? We will consider them in my next broadcast, says Comperé. And that will be Israel in the newer part of the Testament, part 3. So let's proceed. In the past, I have often told you that there is as much Christianity in the older part of the Testament as the newer part, although it is harder to understand because in the older part of the Testament, it is presented mostly in symbolic form, largely in rituals. But Yahweh is always consistent with his own truth. So it is also true that in the newer part of the Testament, it proclaims Yahweh's eternal unchanging love for his own people, Israel. In my last two broadcasts, we have been examining the newer part of the Testament to prove this. We saw that the four Gospels record the words of Jesus Christ and that he strongly emphasized that he was sent primarily to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. In his parables, he taught the truth of Israel's continued place in Yahweh's plan. Then we examined the various epistles of Paul, and we saw that he wrote to the saints, quote-unquote. We know from Psalm 148:14, I was right on that, that all of Yahweh's saints are his people Israel. We saw that in the epistle to the Romans, Paul reminded these saints to whom he wrote that Abraham was their father as pertaining to the flesh. No changing of Gentiles into spiritual Israel, quote-unquote, here. For Paul said Abraham was their father as pertaining to the flesh, quote-unquote. I hope that's clear to you now that this spiritual Israel stuff is nonsense. I mean, you know, you can go into a barn with horses, but you can't spiritually become a horse, can you? Not even Mr. Ed could become spiritually human, even though they made him talk. You understand that pertaining to the flesh means you're the offspring, you're the progeny, you're the in the race, same race. You can't take a horse and say, well, let's make him part of spiritual Israel. You understand? So that would apply to Negroes or anybody else that was a non-Israelite. You understand what I mean? You can't make somebody part of somebody's lineage that way. It's ridiculous. So, no changing of Gentiles into spiritual Israel here, for Paul and said Abraham was their father, quote, unquote, as pertaining to the flesh. Similarly, Paul reminded the saints, quote, unquote, at Corinth that their fathers, like his, passed through the Red Sea with Moses and ate the manna and drank of the water which poured out of the rock in answer to Moses' prayer, something that couldn't be said of Gentiles. Now let's look at the writing of other apostles in the New Testament. What about James? James addresses his epistle to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. This could not be to the Jews, for they were not any of the tribes of Israel, and also they were not scattered abroad when James wrote. Nor, for 10 years thereafter, they were still collected together in Palestine. It could not be the people of the kingdom of Judah, for they were never more than 3 tribes of Judah, Benjamin and Levi, and James is speaking to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. But we know that the Assyrians took into captivity first all of the people of the 10 northern tribes who made up the kingdom of Israel. Then the Assyrians, under the king Sennacherib, invaded the southern kingdom of Judah and deported 200,150 of its people in the same captivity with the 10 tribes. Finally, we know from historical sources that upon the fall of Babylon, the tribes of Israel, by that time known as Scythians, swooped down on Babylon and carried off most of the people of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, who were captives at Babylon, leaving behind just the relatively few who returned to Palestine with Ezra and Nehemiah. So when James wrote his epistle in AD 60, the 12 tribes were scattered abroad. By that time known as Angli, the Saxons, the Ostrogoths, the Visigoths, and the Royal Scyths, already moving in their long march into the predestined homes in Europe. It was to them that James was writing. What about Peter? The first epistle of Peter leaves no doubt that he was writing to the Israelites. The first verse is badly mistranslated. Instead of the strangers scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, as your King James Version reads, the actual wording in the Greek is to the exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, etc. Pontus, Galatia, and Cappadocia are the eastern part of modern Turkey, and we know that the Scythian tribes of Israel did occupy this region before they moved out on their long journey into Europe. They were exiles from their original homeland in Palestine. They were dispersed over a wide region. Finally, to clinch the matter, Peter identified them in the second verse as elect, according to the foreknowledge of Yahweh the Father. But who were God's elect? Who were Yahweh's elect? In Isaiah 45:4, Yahweh speaks of Israel, mine elect. As to the foreknowledge of Yahweh, remember that in Romans 11, verse 2, Paul confirms that Yahweh hath not cast away his people, which he foreknew. Elect is but another word for chosen, quote unquote. In Deuteronomy 7, verse 6, the people of Israel were told that Yahweh their God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. And that ain't the Jews. But let's look farther into what Peter has to say. In 1 Peter 2 verse 9, he says to these exiles of the dispersion on Pontus, Galatia, and Cappadocia, etc., "But ye are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, an holy nation," see, an holy nation, "a particular people, that ye should show forth the praise of him who called you out of the darkness into his marvelous light." I know that your King James Bible says a chosen generation, but that is a mistranslation, for the word in the Greek is genos, meaning a race, not a generation. This couldn't describe anyone but Israel. The chosen race is Israel. And Israel is not the Jews, ladies and gentlemen, I shall add. No way, no how, never was, never will be, never can be. Period. Among many other places, we find it in Isaiah 44, verse 1, "Yet now hear, O Jacob, my servant, and Israel, whom I have chosen," and Deuteronomy 7, verse 6, "Yahweh thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all the people that are on the face of the earth." Next, "a royal priesthood and an holy nation." This also can only be Israel, for Exodus 19, verse 6 tells the people of Israel that, "Ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation." A peculiar people is another identifying mark of Israel. For Deuteronomy 14, verse 2 says, "For thou art an holy people unto Yahweh, their God, and Yahweh hath chosen thee to be a peculiar people unto himself above all the nations that are upon the earth. Finally, that ye should now show forth praise of him," that's Yahweh, "who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light," is another identifying mark of Israel. In Isaiah 43, verse 21, Yahweh says, "This people have I formed for myself. They shall show forth my praise." Let me stop right there and show you what I see in that. Do we know that Adam was formed out of the clay of the land? And that Eve was formed out of that? But this was after there were other races upon this earth. You see, what he's saying here is the Adamic race is his literal offspring. He breathed life into us himself with his own breath. So listen what he's saying here. I mean, it's very revealing as far as I'm concerned. "This people have I formed for myself. They shall show forth my praise." So this stupid idea that all people came from Adam, and then Noah had three different color sons and all this stuff, and we're all the children of Yahweh, is nonsense. For he said, "This people have I formed for myself." This was a special thing he did. It was a special event that he did when he formed Adam. Adam, meaning being able to blush. Now, you can see people that are mixed with white people that can blush, but that doesn't mean they're white people. And that doesn't mean they're Adam. It just means that they've race mixed with Adam. So keep that in mind when he says in Isaiah 43:21, "This people have I formed for myself." Understand, this is a separate event. This is a special event. "They shall show forth my praise." Now, Pompere continues here. Let's see how much time. I got to check on the time. We're doing okay. Pompere says, "I have skipped over the epistle to the Hebrews, which is not signed, but it is usually credited to Paul. I can't imagine anyone disputing that this book, as indicated by its title, is written to, as well as written about the Hebrews, the Israelites. Probably we need to say more about it here. If I were to start in on that book, it alone would take several broadcasts to cover. I will go into that some other time. What of the little misunderstood book of Revelation? It is too clear for any possible doubt that this book was written in symbols and not to be taken literally. But you must understand the symbols used in order to know the great realities for which they stand. These symbols are, in general, Israel symbols. Hence, it can be understood only by those who can recognize the Israel basis of the symbols. This is also a book about which whole volumes have been written. It is too long for me to take up as a subdivision of our present theme of Israel in the newer part of the Testament. But we have covered enough to show that the newer part of the Testament and the older part of the Testament are just the two sides of the same coin. Hello? See, they're not two separate coins. They're not two divided coins. They're part of the same coin. One Testament. That proves it right there. Again, what I told you is true. And I will maintain that. For I'm about changing things back to how they're supposed to be. I'm not about changing the scriptures. But if the name of the Father is in the scriptures, I'm not going to use the word Lord, Baal, for sure. I'm going to change it back. And I have every confidence that the Father will have no problem with that. I'm not changing the scriptures' words or anything like that. I'm changing it back to his name, which it was changed from. I'm restoring it. I'm redeeming it. I'm redeeming this book. And he's really doing it, not me. I can't, but what I'm saying is that the Testament is one Testament. It's two sides of the same coin, like he says here, and have the same value, whichever side you look at, he says. So I am restoring and redeeming the book about the race of Adam, known as the scriptures, the Bible, whatever you want to call it. It's not divided into two or three or five or ten. It's one. You know, when you read a book, there's several chapters. Each book is another chapter of this history. So he says, but we have covered enough to show that the newer part of the Testament and the older part of the Testament are the two sides of the same coin, which has the same value. Whichever side you look at, if it were not so, we could have not confidence in either one of them. We could not have confidence in either one of them. Truth must always be consistent with itself. Jesus Christ came not to take back Yahweh's promises and nullify the prophecies, but rather, as Paul said in Romans 15:8, now I say that Jesus Christ was a minister of the circumcision for the truth of Yahweh, to confirm the promises made unto the fathers. To confirm, not to destroy. I have not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. You see what I'm saying? Back to the article. All that has been promised to Abraham and Moses will be made good. Likewise, these promises to Abraham and Moses included the basis for Christianity. In fact, Moses was a Christian. Does that startle you? When you remember that Moses died more than 1,400 years before Christ was born, right? That's a question. He did die before 1,400 years before Christ was born. Yet the newer part of the Testament tells us that Moses was a Christian. In Hebrews 11, verse 24 through 26, it says, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer the affliction with the people of Yahweh than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Funny that I just had to make the same decision myself. And will continue to make that decision. I'd rather than being rich and miserable, I'd rather be poor and happy with the Father. Now, it didn't mean I wouldn't have been with the Father, but I had an opportunity and I passed it up. No, and somebody wasn't trying to buy me or sell me out or something like that. I can't explain it to you right now. But I had to choose. And when I chose, I knew what I was choosing. I was choosing rather to suffer the affliction with the people of Yahweh than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. It really is that kind of a thing. It seems that in this world, before I go on with this article, and we're almost done, so it's perfect timing, I would say. Let's see. Yeah, we have about 10 minutes. You know, it seems that the people that are in this world that are rich at this point, they're given their heaven now. The Jews, you can see, are living their so-called heaven now. They have all that they could want. And it's sort of how Yahweh seems to do this. He kind of keeps us poor and on the edge so that we'll stay with him and love him and not depend on anything but him. But there are those who have so much, and they have so much, they don't want to give any of it up. It's all theirs, but that's their heaven now. That's their power now. And it's true for some of our brothers and sisters that they have their heaven now, and that they, instead of choosing to be with us, they chose the pleasures of sin for a season, I guess. It's a very sad thing. We have many brothers and sisters that, they're really not, they're brothers and sisters racially, but not in Christ. And they have sold out. They have become sold out to the devil and his children. As the phone rings right in the middle of the show, how sweet it is. See, they've chosen to sell out. They've chosen to get their heaven now. Many of these congressmen and congresswomen, if there are any white ones left, I don't really know how many white congressmen and congresswomen are left. But if they sell out now, they get a few homes, they get the best medical insurance, they have the best of everything, yachts and all kinds of things. But they grafted themselves in with the goats and they are going to receive the punishment for doing so. And it's sad, but there's nothing, I don't know what we can do about it except pray. I pray for all of Israel. And for no Jew, anything I pray about a Jew is imprecatory prayer. Why can't our people see that the Father's watching? Why can't they pass these tests that would be so easy to pass? They don't want to pass the tests. They don't think he's watching. I don't know. Do they really believe in him? Do they really love him? Is their heart close to him? I really can't say. I can only speak for myself, I suppose. And I'm not self-deceived. I really love the Father, and I mean that. I've had to make the choice I just made twice now. I could have lived a life without living on the edge at all times, you know, financially. But I had to pass it up. And it's a choice you make. See, one of the biggest lessons I learned is don't bother with that anymore. to keep my eyes on the Father and keep the course that he has me on. You know, I wanted a wife, but that's really not that important. I've lived without a wife for a long time, and so it shall remain that way, and I shall look no longer for a wife. And that's the name of the song I wrote. This is the last time I'm looking for a wife, or I'm searching for a wife. So that's it. I shall not pursue that any longer. I learned my lesson. I watched the tests, and the tests were not good, unfortunately. Nobody's perfect, but if only people could understand that the Father's watching them, but they also don't understand me when I'm watching. They must, I don't know what it is, maybe, you know, I'm not trying to tell you I'm great or anything like that, but I can see and I listen very carefully. And I watch everything that goes on because I'm like the Father. I'm an eagle on the pole. And when I'm off the pole, I'm still an eagle and I'm watching. And these people don't realize that I can see. They think they're fooling me. And they are probably in some ways because I made the trip. So in other words, I'm not that smart, right? But I do, I can see. I can see things. Sometimes you can't see them at a distance. You have to get close up to them to get a load of it. And it's too bad. That's all I can say. But people underestimate my vision, let's say. I think they think they can put a lot over on me, and they don't understand that just because I don't say something about something doesn't mean I don't know it. But even worse than that is, who cares about who I'm watching? The Father's watching. And just imagine what he knows compared to what I think I know or what I do know. May I tell you that the Father is watching you. May you understand that. And may you get the gravity of what that really means. And may it help you to come into line and keep you in line. So, listen to what Comparé says here. Therefore, never let anyone tell you that the two halves of the Bible are inconsistent. Oh, but he says it. Listen to this. Listen to this. Therefore, never let anyone tell you that the two halves of the Bible are inconsistent and that to accept one, you must reject the other. No, the Bible is all one book. Okay, see, he still called it newer and the new and the old, right? But I've just changed it. But he realizes that it's one book, right? Now, I didn't get this from Comparé, but it's funny that knowing that he says that the Bible is all one book, but he didn't call it the newer and the older. He called it the new and old, which are two halves. He just said it was two halves. So he was close to it, but I guess he just didn't finish it up like that. That's all. So it says, it tells of Yahweh's putting his sons and daughters on earth as his chosen people, Israel, the great destiny he set for them. It tells of his foreknowledge and of their imperfections and sins and his provision from before the foundation of the world of the Redeemer who would save his people. Both the older and the newer testament, older and newer part of the testaments are Christian books, and both of them are Israel books. But see, it's not both of them, it's one of them. That's what I will finish that with, is that it's one book. I know one thing, and that's this. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.